Hello, this is Alan, your storyteller, welcoming you to the Story Home. We have an ancient tale about a boy who drew a sword from a stone and became the rightful king of all Britain. We present the story of King Arthur, written by Henry Gilbert, lightly abridged, and read by Alan Schofield. While it was still dark, a great cry rang out in St. Paul's churchyard. Some ran forth. And there by the wall behind the high altar they saw a vast stone, four square, that had never been there before, and in the middle of it a great steel sword was stuck deep into it. On the blade was written the words in Latin, which a clerk read forth, which said, "Whoever pulleth the sword out of the stone is rightwise born king of all Britain." When Mass was finished, all poured forth from the church and thronged about the stone, and marveled at the words on the sword. First King Lot, with a light laugh, took hold of the handle and tried to pull out the point of the sword, but he could not, and his face went hot and angry. Then King Nantra of Garlow took his place with laughter, but though he heaved at the sword with all his burly strength, he could not move it, letting go at last with angry words. All the others did in like manner, but none were able to move it even an inch, and all stood about with black looks at one another and the stone. "He that is rightwise born ruler of Britain is not here," said the archbishop at length, "but doubt not he shall come in God's good time. Meanwhile, let a tent be raised over the stone, and do ye lords appoint 10 of you to watch over it, and we will visit the sword again after New Year's Day." So that the kings and lords should be kept together, the archbishop appointed a great tournament to be held on New Year's Day on the land north of the city, which men now call Smithfield. When the day was come, a certain lord, Sir Ector of Morven, rode toward the jousts with his son Sir Kay and young Arthur, who was Sir Kay's foster brother. When they had got nearly to the place, suddenly Sir Kay bethought him that he had left his sword at home. "Do ride back, young Arthur," he said, "and fetch me my sword, for if I do not have it, I cannot fight." Willingly, Arthur turned his horse and rode back swiftly. But when he had arrived at the house, he found it shut up and none was within, for all had gone to the jousts. Then he was a little worried and rode back wondering how he should obtain a sword for his foster brother. Suddenly, he saw the tower of St. Paul's Church through the trees, and bethought him of the sword in the stone, about which many men had spoken. "I will ride thither," he said, "and see if I might get that sword for my brother, for he shall not be without a sword this day." When he came to the churchyard, he tied his horse to the gate, and went through the graveyard to the tent wherein was the sword. He found the place unwatched, and the flashing sword was sticking by the point in the stone. Lightly he grasped the handle of the sword with one hand, and with a small pull, it came forth straight away. Then, glad that his brother should not be without a sword, he swiftly got up on his horse and rode away, delivering the sword to Sir Kay, and thought no more of it among the splendid knights and richly dressed lords at the tournament. But Sir Kay looked at the sword and the writing and knew it was the sword of the stone, and marveled how young Arthur had possessed himself thereof, and being envious of mind, he thought how he might take advantage. And he went to his father, Sir Ector, and said, "Look, father, this is the sword of the stone, and surely I am the rightful king." Sir Ector knew the sword and marveled at it, but his look was stern as he gazed into the crafty eyes of his son. "Come ye with me," he said, and all three rode to the church and got off their horses and went in. Sir Ector strode up the aisle to the altar, and turning to his son, said sternly, "Now swear on God's book and the holy relics how thou didst get this sword." Sir Kay's heart went weak, and he stammered out the truth. Sir Ector now asked Arthur, "How got you this sword?"
"Sir, I will tell you," said Arthur, and so told him all as it had happened.
Sir Ector marveled at what this would mean, for Arthur had been given to him to raise as a weak old child by Merlin. But the wizard had only told him that the babe was the son of a lady whose lord had been slain by pagans. Then Sir Ector went to the stone and bade Arthur put back the sword into the wedge of steel, which the young man did easily. Then Sir Ector strove with all his strength to draw the sword from the stone again. But though he pulled until he sweated, he could not stir the sword.
"Now you try it," he said to Sir Kay, but nothing he did could move it.
"Now do you try," he bade Arthur. Arthur lightly grasped the handle with one hand, and the sword came out easily.
Sir Ector sank to his knees, and Sir Kay also, and they bowed their heads.
"Alas," said Arthur, "my own dear father and brother, why do you kneel to me?"
"Nay, nay, my lord Arthur, it is not so," said Ector, "for I was never your father. You are of higher blood than I gave birth to, for Merlin himself delivered you to me while ye were still a babe."
Then tears came to Arthur's eyes when he knew that Sir Ector was not his father, for the young man had loved him as if he were of his own blood.
"Sir," said Ector to Arthur, "will ye be my good and kind lord when you are king?"
"Ha, ha, if this be true," cried Arthur,
"you shall ask of me whatever you may, and I shall give it to you. For both you and my dear mother, your wife, have kept me and loved me as your own."
"And, sir," said Sir Ector, "I ask a favor of you, that while you live, your foster brother, Sir Kay, shall have authority over all your lands."
"That shall be done, and never a man shall have that office but him, while he and I live," replied Arthur.
Then quickly Sir Ector rode to the archbishop, and told him how and by whom the sword had been achieved from the stone. The archbishop called a great meeting of the 12th day of Christmas for all the kings and barons. On that day, all men gathered in the churchyard of St. Paul's, and the tent was removed from about the stone. From dawn of day until evening, the kings and princes and lords each labored by turns to draw the sword from the stone, but none of them could move it. When they stood around, dark of look, gnawing their lips with rage and disappointment, the archbishop turned secretly to Sir Ector and asked him to bring Arthur to the stone. The young man came, quietly clad in a tunic of brown silk, of medium height, with curly hair and a fair and noble face. And as he came through the richly clad nobles, they looked haughtily at him, and wondered who he was and why he came, and as yet none had been told that the sword had been drawn by him. The archbishop, tall, white-haired, and reverend, called Arthur close and said in grave tones, "My son, I have heard a strange tale of thee, and whether it be true or false, God shall decide. Now therefore, do ye take hold upon this sword and essay to draw it from the stone." The proud barons, some with looks amazed and others with sneering laughter, pressed about the young man as he stepped toward the stone. Arthur took the handle of the sword with his right hand, and the sword seemed to fall into his grasp. Then great cries of rage arose, and angry looks flashed forth, and many a hand went to their daggers. King Lot, fiercely striding forward, cried, "What wizard's brat are you foisting upon us here to draw the sword by magic?"
"'Tis a trick," cried Nantra of Garlow, but his bluff manner fell from him, and all the savage anger gleamed from his eyes.
"A trick that shall not blind men such as we."
"Who is this beggar's boy that has put forth shame to kings and nobles?" said King Mark.
"Peace, lords," said the old archbishop, calmly meeting the raging looks about him. "Ye know what words are about the sword, and this youth has drawn the sword. I know nothing of tricks or wizardry, and I think high heaven has chosen this way of showing us
who shall be lord of this land, and I think this young man is rightful king of us all.
We will have the sword put back and watch over it, cried King Uriens, and we will meet once more at the Feast of Pentecost to draw the sword.
On feasting day, men gathered in the churchyard of St. Paul's again, and the great crowd was such that no man had ever seen the like. Once more, the kings and princes and great barons, to the number of 49, came forward, and each in turn pulled and drew the sword and the stone until the sweat stood on their brows, but not even the mightiest of them could move it by the width of a hair. Then a cry came from among the common people, and so strong was it that the nobles looked as if they hated to hear it. "Let Arthur draw the sword!" was the call from a thousand throats. The venerable archbishop came and took Arthur by the hand and led him towards the sword. Again, the young man held the rich pommel with his right single hand, and that which none of the 49 great men could do, he did as easily as if he but plucked a flower. A fierce cry leaped from among the thousands of the common people. "Arthur shall be our king," they cried. "Arthur is our king." And by the hand of heaven, the legend of King Arthur had begun.
We have been listening to King Arthur's Knights by Henry Gilbert, lightly abridged and read by Alan Schofield. This and many other stories are waiting for you at www.thestoryhome.com. Remember, the Story Home is your home, and the door is always open. With a wink and a bow, this is your storyteller, Alan, wishing you a fond farewell. Till next time.